The following podcast is a production of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
Excuse me, is everyone's cell phone off? Not on vibrate, but on off? Well then, all rise. Oyez, oyez, oyez. All persons having business before the Honorable, the Supreme Court of the United States, are admonished to draw near and give attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this honorable court.
Please be seated.
Before we begin, I just wanted to introduce our distinguished panel. To my left, we begin with Professor Jamie Raskin, who is the co-director of the Law and Government Program here at Washington College of Law. He also teaches constitutional and First Amendment law and has been co-director of the Marshall Brennan Fellows Program. And he's the author of several books on the Supreme Court, including We the Students, which examines the Supreme Court's treatment of America's high schools and their students. Next, we have another Washington College of Law professor, Stephen Vermeil, who is the director of the Marshall Brennan Constitutional Literacy Project, and he has served as associate director of the Program on Law and Government. He also teaches constitutional law, a seminar on the Supreme Court, and media law. And finally, we have Addie Schmidt, who is an associate at Dickstein, Shapiro, Morin, and Oshinsky Law Firm. She is an associate for the firm's Litigation and Dispute Resolution Group, and she focuses her practice on civil litigation in federal and state court. Mm-hmm. And finally, before we get started, I am going to introduce our finalists, and I will ask you once again to stand briefly. Arguing for the petitioners is Lucas Hobte from Fair Oaks, California. He's in the 11th grade. Olivia Nguyen, who's in the 12th grade from Orange Vale, California. Respondents, Brittany Boveri, who's in the 12th grade from Annandale, Virginia. And Joanna Davis, who's in the 12th grade from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Thank you. I just want to remind you that the podcast will be posted on the website tomorrow morning, and we'll provide a URL to your coaches. Thank you.
All right, the court is ready to hear the first round of arguments. We'll hear from petitioner first whenever you're ready.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. Honorable Chief Justice, may it please the Court, my name is Olivia Nguyen, and I am counsel for the petitioners in this matter. At this time, I would like to request 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay.
Your Honors, this case is about the drug test that Principal Phillip administered to Michael Smith on October 10, 2004, and about the Fourth Amendment rights that students have on school campus. The petitioners suggest that there is no constitutional violation in this case, and that we respectfully request Your Honors to reverse the judgment made in the Court of Appeals. Would Your Honors like the petitioners to present a brief statement of the facts?
Very brief.
On October 10, 2004, as part of the Calvert City's drug testing program, five expertly trained drug-sniffing dogs were brought to the school to search for students that were in possession of drugs or drug paraphernalia. Michael Smith was on the basketball team, and although he was not caught, Veronica Jones, a fellow classmate, expressed her concern that Michael Smith did indeed use drugs, and Principal Phillip administered a drug test. Your Honors, my client, the Calvert City School District, did not violate Michael Smith's Fourth Amendment rights to be free from unreasonable search and seizures for two reasons. Considering the two-part test that determines the reasonableness of a search that this court established in New Jersey v. TLO, Jefferson High School first met the required suspicion to justify the urine analysis of Smith by obtaining a statement from a source that before the procedures were taking place, and secondly, because the search met the scope requirements by adopting measures that were reasonably related to the objectives of the search with regard to age, gender, and the nature of the infraction. Your Honors, the school's main concern is that of health and safety of its students. The drug problem in schools is effectively harming their health as well as their learning environments. This court stated in Vernonia v. Acton that the effects of a drug-infested school are visited not just upon the users, but upon the entire student body and faculty as the educational process is disrupted. Requiring Smith to undergo a drug test based on the reasonable suspicion he was using drugs is well within the confines of the student drug test.
What was the basis of the reasonable suspicion here?
Your Honors, Principal Phillips relied on the statement of Michael Smith's fellow classmate, Veronica Jones. Before further investigating, she expressed a concern that Michael Smith regularly smoked marijuana in the boys' locker room before basketball practice with fellow teammates
so
and friends.
You would invite the court to establish a categorical rule that if there's one student who enters the principal's office to say that another student is using marijuana, that that in itself constitutes reasonable suspicion?
Your Honors, in addition to that, Veronica Jones isn't anonymous. She put her name to the statement. Also, the fact that she shared a personal relationship with Michael Smith, she wasn't an arbitrary student, a student in his classroom, or even a teacher. She would know Michael Smith's actions and behaviors better than an arbitrary student.
Suppose before the drug test had taken place, a second student had gone to the principal and said, "Don't believe Veronica Jones. She's angry at Michael Smith because they broke up." Would that raise doubt about the reasonable suspicion?
Your Honors, in that circumstance, Principal Phillips would further corroborate Veronica Jones' testimony. But in this case, she expressed...
Did Principal Jones do anything to corroborate the testimony?
Your Honors, her statement was individually and independently corroborated by the fact that when she expressed her concern, she stated that Michael Smith regularly smoked with three other members on the basketball team. And in fact, it was found that that morning, those same three students were found guilty of possession of drugs. So, considering that 15 students...
The respondent was not, is that correct? He was searched, is that correct, earlier?
The drug-sniffing dogs searched the students as they passed the school gates. However, even though Michael Smith wasn't caught with possession of drugs, that doesn't determine that he wasn't in use of drugs. And as stated in the policy, Michael Smith signed under the statement that if he chose to disregard school policy regarding the use or possession of illegal or performance-enhancing drugs, that he would be subject to restrictions on his participation. Your Honors, informed by Jones that Michael regularly smoked marijuana, Principal Phillips had no other choice but to administer the test in order to ensure Michael Smith was not in violation of the school rules. Your Honors, the failure to act could have potentially endangered the rest of the student body, so Principal Phillips was obligated to act in the best interest of the school.
Why couldn't the principal have selected a number of other students randomly to try to make this more like the random drug test that this court has dealt with in the past?
Your Honor, this case isn't about random drug testing. It wasn't he didn't directly pick out Michael Smith. The policy outlines there are three possible conditions in which the athlete consents to provide a urine sample, one being the annual physical for eligibility of the participation. The second condition is random selection, and the third condition is that any time requested based on reasonable suspicion to be tested for illegal performance enhancing drugs.
But if we didn't agree with you about the existence of reasonable suspicion, I assume then your best argument is going to be that this meets the random drug test waiver.
Yes, Your Honor, that would be our second result, but that is not the case here, as reasonable suspicion did exist with Veronica Jones's statement.
Mm-hmm. Do you need this signed consent form? I mean, assume he had signed nothing. Wouldn't you still be arguing under New Jersey versus TLO that there is individualized reasonable suspicion based on the statement made by the ex-girlfriend?
Yes, Your Honor. As stated in TLO, Justice White mentioned that what is reasonable depends on the context of the search, balancing the need for the search and the invasion that the search entails. So in this case, a school official doesn't violate the Fourth Amendment so long as the official has reasonable grounds to believe that the student possesses evidence of illegal activity or an activity that would interfere with school discipline and order.
Does that standard change when the police department is involved? Shouldn't the standard be elevated?
No, Your Honor. The police officer in this case had minimal involvement. He wasn't specifically called in to witness Michael Smith's drug test. He was already located on the campus as part of the district-wide program to deter drug use. It places police officers at local high schools in order to decrease the amount of drug abuse on schools. Therefore, he was just a mere observer in this case at Principal Phillips' request to ensure the legitimacy of the test.
The principal actually went to the police officer for advice first. Is that correct?
Your Honors, Principal Phillips, the police officer did suggest to Principal Phillips to administer the test. However, Principal Phillips had the final decision on whether or not to administer the test. In fact, he was obligated to administer the test with regard to school policy, as Michael Smith violated his agreement with the school. So, considering the fact that just because the police officer suggested it, Principal Phillips had the final say. Along with Principal Phillips, Vice Principal Collins heard Veronica Jones' testament, and they both felt that her statement was compelling enough to further investigate the situation.
If the facts were a little bit different and the principal had said to the police officer in charge of the patrol at this school, "We leave it up to you, you decide whether to drug test Michael Smith," would that argue for a different standard?
Your Honor, that may argue for a different standard, but in this case, it's the administration that is in charge of this search, not the police department. This court has...
Could the evidence be turned over to the police now for prosecution for illegal use or possession of drugs?
Your Honor, the facts are unclear about whether or not there could be criminal prosecutions. However, thus far, there have been no criminal...
As a matter of constitutional law, would it be okay for the school to turn whatever contraband evidence is disclosed through the school investigation to criminal law enforcement authorities for prosecution?
Your Honor, it has been held in New Jersey v. TLO that some of the results from a drug test can be turned over to the police with regard to further consequences. However, in this case, Michael Smith signed under the statement that if I choose to disregard school policy regarding the use or possession of illegal drugs, I understand upon that determination of violation, I will be subject to the restrictions on my participation as outlined in the policy. Therefore, it has already been determined that Michael Smith was in violation, as his test results revealed that he had positive trace amounts of marijuana in his system. Therefore, he must accept the repercussions of his irresponsible behavior and endure the disciplinary actions that the school has provided for him.
Before you run out of time, counsel, what about the lack of privacy of any kind under which the drug test was administered?
Your Honors, the facts are unclear about the exact details and how the amount of intrusion of privacy. However, in any case, the respondent signed in the policy that he accepted the method of obtaining urine samples. Your Honors, the...
Well, if you required the kids to sign a statement saying that they would be willing to undergo strip searches in order to get on the football team or the track team or whatever, are you saying that that should be binding simply because they agreed to sign that? I mean, don't we ultimately have to be the final arbiter of what's reasonable and what's not?
Yes, Your Honor. It wouldn't allow such unreasonable procedures, but as Justice Breyer mentioned, Your Honors, I see my time is up. May I briefly answer?
Yes.
As Justice Breyer mentioned in the Board of Education, the testing program always preserves the option for a conscientious objector. He can refuse testing while paying a price of non-participation, but it's less severe than expulsions or suspensions.
So you're saying in this case he could have refused to undergo the drug test?
Yes, Your Honor. There's always that option for...
And at the point at which you administered the drug test, he could have said, "I refuse to go along with this"?
Yes, Your Honor. He would only forfeit his right to participate in athletics. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Whenever you're ready, counsel.
Good evening, or good afternoon, Honorable Chief Justice. May it please the court, my name is Brittany Boveri. I am representing the respondent, Michael Smith. I request you affirm the decision from the Court of Appeals and rule in favor of my client for the following reasons. The drug test failed to meet the proper requirements mandated by the Fourth Amendment. The school had no basis for reasonable suspicion. My client did consent to a drug test. However, under the three terms to which he consented, they were not fulfilled in the actual administration of the test. And finally, the intrusive nature of the search itself violated my client's right to be free from unreasonable searches and seizures. To begin with, the involvement of a police officer in this case should have elevated the governing level of suspicion to one of probable cause, not reasonable suspicion. The principal felt the need to ask a police officer to be present during the test. By doing so, they should have raised the bar.
But wouldn't that only be true, counsel, if we were sure that the police officer then would have access to the information for criminal purposes?
Well, the police officer did have access to the information for criminal purposes, and it was a possibility that my client could be exposed to a criminal liability.
Okay, but then why don't we just decide in that case that the evidence is not admissible against him because it wasn't based on a probable cause standard? All we have before us is the civil case dealing with the suspension and removal from the team.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, could you...
Well, you're simply saying because a police officer was involved that there should be a higher standard of proof, probable cause, before the search can go forward and presumably a search warrant. But didn't we find in New Jersey versus TLO, if the search is just internal to the school for school administrative purposes, it's okay to use the lesser reasonable suspicion standard?
True. However, if the court does find that there are reasons for reasonable suspicion instead of probable cause, then the school still had no basis for a reasonable suspicion. In New Jersey versus TLO, reasonable suspicion was based on an eyewitness report from a teacher. In this situation, the incriminating evidence was based off of one person's sole report. Furthermore, this person had a questionable motive due to the nature of the relationship with my client. She was an ex-girlfriend who had ended their relationship 2 months before.
But counsel, if we follow your suggestion, then aren't we putting the principal in a position where they have to do basically a thorough investigation? Are they supposed to depose a student who brings forward evidence? I mean, where would the line? That would be administratively burdensome.
Well, see, Your Honor, in this case, there was only the sole word of a biased ex-girlfriend with no corroboration. If there was further corroboration, then this case would have more support.
What's your authority for that proposition? What's wrong with one witness who seems to know a lot of very specific details?
Well, her relationship causes her to be biased, and the fact that there is no corroboration leads to no support for reasonable suspicion.
When you say biased, what do you mean? I mean, a witness could be biased but still telling the truth, right?
Yes.
As this witness seemed to be.
Her relationship with the witness and the terms on which the relationship came to an end creates her as an unreliable witness.
You're suggesting she may have concocted the whole story.
It is possible. She never actually stated whether or not she saw my client smoking marijuana in the bathroom. In the case of New Jersey versus TLO, there was an eyewitness report. In this case, it was only alluded to through conversation. Furthermore, there was no corroborating evidence. On the day of the random drug search, my client, nothing was found to be incriminating or suggestive of drug use on my client.
Well, the purpose of the drug test presumably was to provide the corroborating evidence. Right. In other words, he wasn't suspended and disciplined at the point at which the report was made. It was only after they went ahead and conducted the drug test, which he had consented to, that they found that there was enough evidence to justify discipline.
True. However, there's two weak factors that to create a basis for a reasonable suspicion, and two weak factors do not create totalitarian grounds for a reasonable suspicion as a whole. Reasonable suspicion is a totalitarianistic term, and you cannot have two weak factors that lead into it. However, you said that, Your Honor, that the client consented to a drug test, which he did, but only under three specific terms that were outlined in the athletic agreement. The drug test that he consented to would have been on one, grounds for reasonable suspicion, which here there is no corroborating evidence and a biased, unreliable source. Furthermore, it was not part of a physical exam or for a test of eligibility. And that he was no way randomly selected, but instead he was singled out.
But counsel, under the concept of random selection, theoretically he could have been one of a number of students picked out any day at any time by the school to drug test, correct?
Theoretically, however, that's not the case.
But so if he was picked out on a particular day and singled out, what's the difference whether they tested three people that day or tested him alone that day?
Because if they tested three people and they randomly selected three people, then that would be a random selection and it would comply with the rules. In this case, though, a student came forward, put my client's name out on the table, and they then tested him.
Well, what would you have had the principal do at that point? What should the principal have done after the other student came in reporting marijuana use?
Well, the principal should have had stronger grounds for reasonable suspicion.
But what should the principal have done? The principal now has a student in his office saying, I know that so-and-so kid is using marijuana regularly. And you're saying just say thank you and then go about his day? Or
well, he should have taken that into consideration, but he should have also had stronger grounds, such as corroboration. The fact that he was not randomly selected, but singled out, it mitigates the fact that he signed the consent form, because it was not a part of the consent form to have a singular test performed on that student. Furthermore, the extent to which my client was singled out was highly intrusive. It violated his right to be free from an unreasonable search and seizure. In Baronia, the court established that only one person is necessary for a test to take place to ensure that there is no tampering or problems with the evidence. The presence of three people was excessively intrusive. This court violated his Fourth Amendment right to an unreasonable search and seizure.
Am I correct that in Baronia the student was actually in a stall, so there was some privacy protection in Baronia that didn't exist here? Is that correct?
The facts are not clear whether or not my client was in a stall or out of a stall. However, the presence of a police officer, the principal, and a male athletic trainer is supportive of the fact that it was an excessively intrusive search when there was only the need
for... Haven't we addressed before that student athletes have a lower expectation of privacy in the locker room anyway?
They do have a lower expectation of privacy. However, in Vernonia, the court, the principal followed the terms in the athletic agreement, which I just reviewed, the grounds for reasonable suspicion, the part of a physical, and the random selection. In this case, they did not abide by those terms. So therefore, although athletes do have a lesser expectation of privacy, that does not rule out the fact that they did not follow the due process that the school outlined in its own guidelines. The four other teammates of Michael Smith endured a random drug test. In this case, my client was singled out to a search that fell outside the parameters of the athletic agreement.
Doesn't that count against you? If the other students had already tested positive, doesn't that count against you in that the principal may have had even additional reason for suspicion that there was a problem on the team?
No, because one cannot be held accountable for the actions of his peers. So therefore, it's irrelevant to the facts of this case whether or not his peers did drugs, because, like I previously said, one cannot be held accountable.
Well, doesn't the fact that he ended up testing positive in truth justify the reasonability of the original search?
No, he could have merely been in the room with his friends while they were smoking. It's very unclear in the facts as to exactly when he smoked. There was simply traces in his system.
But which was a violation of the policy, right?
Yes. Pardon, the school...
For him, you're saying it's unclear when he smoked marijuana?
Yes.
But wasn't it a violation of his agreement to smoke marijuana at any point in addition to violation of the law?
However, that's not what we are trying in this case. In this case, we all can agree that drugs are wrong and that Michael Smith made a mistake when he did smoke marijuana. However, in this case, what we are trying is the fact that the school completely and blatantly disregarded due process, and which led to the unreasonable search of Michael Smith.
Well, where was the violation of due process?
The due process outlined by the circumstances in the athletic agreement that Michael consented to. The school claims that they followed that by consenting and by signing this form, Michael consented to a drug test. However, he consented to a drug test under the three terms in the athletic agreement. Those three terms were not fulfilled.
Why couldn't the presence of drugs in the bags of the other members of the basketball team be sufficient to create reasonable suspicion? Could the principal at that point have said, I want to test the entire basketball team?
He could have done so, yes. However, even if there was reasonable suspicion, the way that the school went about testing or administering the drug test violates the Fourth Amendment right to be free from unreasonable searches and seizures. If they had tested the entire basketball team and then found Michael Smith to have traces of marijuana in his system, would be a different story. However, they did not. They singled out my client and they tested him by intruding on his privacy with three other adults in the bathroom instead of the one that was ruled to be necessary in Vernonia. Therefore, because the drug test failed to meet the Fourth Amendment rights, the school had no basis for reasonable suspicion due to the fact that there was an unreliable and biased source. They had no corroborating evidence. My client did consent to the drug test, but the three terms under which he consented were not fulfilled. The intrusive nature of the search itself and the blatant disregard for due process and the rules that the school itself outlined. Your Honor, I see that my
please
time is
conclude.
Up. May I please conclude? For the aforementioned reasons, I ask that you affirm the decision of the lower courts and rule in favor of my client. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your Honors, the respondent stated that the four other basketball team members that were caught earlier that morning were randomly drug tested and punished accordingly. However, the petitioners respectfully disagree with this statement, as in the fact there is no record of what actually happened to the rest of the basketball team members and what happened after they were caught with possession of drugs. Also, the respondents also mentioned that this court should elevate the standard from reasonable suspicion to probable cause. However, school searches need not be based on probable cause because this court has held in New Jersey v. TLO that reasonable suspicion suffices as a proper standard when determining the reasonableness of a test.
That was 20 years ago, though, counsel. Have times changed, and are we now in a situation where, because of the extensive police involvement, we need to look at this as closer to a police scenario, particularly with juveniles being prosecuted as adults so often now?
Your Honor, the times have changed, but schools are even more dangerous than in the past with recent shootings related to drug use. So this court has established that the nature of the administrative power is custodial and tutelary, and they have the obligation to ensure safety and provide a learning an environment conducive to learning for its students with swift and informal disciplinary procedures.
Do you think that we should send the message that students should turn in other students for alleged possession of drugs or use of drugs or alcohol or cigarettes? In other words, is that the right message that we should be sending to millions of school kids across the country?
No, Your Honors, but if Your Honors find on the side of the respondents, you're sending a message that schools are condoning the behavior of using drugs and sending the message that school officials don't have the right to swiftly and accordingly act to ensure the safety of their students. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Thank you both very much. And now we'll hear from the other petitioner and respondent. Thank you. Whenever you're ready.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. Honorable Chief Justice, may it please the Court, my name is Lucas Abte, and I am counsel for the petitioner in this matter. At this time, I would like to request 2 minutes for rebuttal. Thank you. This case is about the drug test that was administered on Michael Smith by his principal, Principal Phillip of the Jefferson High School in the Calvert City School District, and the reasonableness and constitutionality of this test. The petitioner believes that this test did not violate the Fourth Amendment rights of Michael Smith, and that this court should reverse the ruling of the lower court for the two main reasons. First, reasonable suspicion existed, outlined by the two-part test of New Jersey versus TLO, and secondly, the drug test was administered within the scope of the Fourth Amendment when considering stipulations such as age and gender that were also laid out in New Jersey versus TLO. On school campuses, there must be a balance between the privacy of students and the freedom of administrators to maintain a safe school environment, because students are required to be there, so there must be an environment that is conducive to learning for the students. Because of this, in New Jersey versus TLO, this court held that school administrators need to only have reasonable suspicion, not probable cause.
Do you think drug testing at school is conducive to a learning environment?
If it is preventing drug use, then yes it is, because drug use in Bologna School District versus Acton, this court held that drug use in schools is not just visited upon the users themselves, but the entire school student body and the faculty, as the entire educational process is disrupted.
And is drug testing in fact preventing drug use? You said if it's conducive to learning if it in fact deters drug use. Is drug testing deterring drug use? Do we have reason to believe that?
Well, Your Honor, it is reasonable to believe that drug testing would deter students from, if the school has a strict drug testing policy and they punish students for using drugs, then it is reasonable to believe that, yes, this would deter students from using drugs.
Yeah, well, this case seems to contradict the thesis, right, where you had several students who signed these consent forms saying they can be drug tested at any time, and yet they still went ahead and used drugs.
They went ahead and used drugs, but that's why this is important, because this Principal Phillip administered a drug test, then if this court does not reverse the ruling of the lower court, it sends the message that school administrators will not have the right to drug test their students, and in that way prevent and try to deter at least and punish students that do use drugs, because it is a serious problem in many schools.
Counsel, do you have a timeliness problem with your argument, though? Hasn't our previous cases have held that there needs to be a connection between the nature and immediacy of the threat to the school in response to the testing that they're doing or the steps that the school has taken? It seems to me that everything in this case is stale, if you will. Ms. Jones' testimony about Michael Smith's previous drug use was, I believe, a year old from the previous school year, and you're not contending that you had any immediate threat from Michael Smith, are you?
There was a threat on the school, Your Honor. There was a threat because there had been recent school shootings related to drug trafficking on a neighboring school district, and Principal Phillip felt it was necessary to immediately stop this problem before it could elevate to the level of violence related to drug use and trafficking. Reasonable suspicion was defined by a two-part test in New Jersey versus TLO. First, the test must be justified at its inception, and secondly, it must be reasonably related in scope to the circumstances which justified the interference in the first place. Now, the initial justification for the drug search was provided by the testimony of Ms. Veronica Jones, a student who had told Principal Phillip that she had a past relationship with Smith and that she was concerned about the well-being and safety of her peers because Michael Smith had been using drugs frequently and she knew that he had done it in the locker room with his fellow students. Now, Jones is a credible source partly because she had a relationship with Smith, so she would know him more than an arbitrary student or teacher would, and also it is corroborated.
Or have better reason to lie, perhaps.
Well, Your Honor, the principal felt that her testimony was compelling enough to investigate and have a suspicion that Michael Smith was a possible drug user and therefore initiate this test. But also her testimony was corroborated by the fact that she was not an anonymous source. She had her name out there. She was not just sending a slip. She was testifying under her own name. And also, there had been 15 students earlier that morning who had been apprehended for drug possession.
Would it interfere with the principal's ability to deal with drugs at school if we said that there had to be more corroboration than this?
Well, Your Honor, yes, it would. There needs to be a lot of leeway for school administrators in order to judge by themselves the circumstances surrounding a tip from a student or a teacher for them to be able to initiate these swift and informal disciplinary procedures that are necessary in schools, because there needs to be a safe learning environment that is conducive to learning, as I have stated. So upon hearing the information, it became Principal Phillips' duty as guardian and principal of the school to ensure that a student was not using drugs and potentially endangering the entire student body through his drug use. And this is coherent with the substantial interest of school administrators to maintain order in the classrooms and off school grounds. Phillip obtained the necessary reasonable suspicion before administering this drugs test and therefore complied with the terms of the athletic agreement that Michael Smith had signed, which had one condition that he could be tested at any time based on a reasonable suspicion. The other two were based on an annual physical or a random
selection. Isn't that provision redundant of New Jersey versus TLO and Vernonia School District versus Acton? I mean, did you need to get him to sign that in order to have the authority to force him to undergo a drug test? I mean, because don't those cases say if there is individualized reasonable suspicion, the school can require the kid to do it anyway?
Yes, Your Honor. In New Jersey, if I understand your question, in New Jersey versus TLO, this court held that reasonable suspicion is the standard. So in that stipulation of the contract that reasonable at any time based on reasonable suspicion, I believe was partly so the student could understand that this was how they could be tested, not just randomly, but if the principal has reasonable suspicion that they can, it makes it explicitly clear to all the people involved that the student can be tested.
I just mean to say that if we find that a tip like this constitutes reasonable suspicion, the school will be able to subject any kid in America to a drug test based on such a statement of a reliable source. Because you don't need to sign something like this, at least as I understand your argument. There doesn't need to have to be a signed waiver in a case like this. It's enough that the school has the suspicion, the individualized reasonable suspicion.
Yes, all the school needs is reasonable suspicion. There doesn't need to be a contract. But Michael Smith had to sign the contract in order to participate in the basketball team. And he was a student athlete, so he already had a reduced expectation of privacy and subjected himself to a higher level of scrutiny, as held by this court in Vernonia School District versus Acton, that these athletes do have this reduced expectation of privacy because they are already subjected to undressing in front of each other and showering and stuff like this. And because of this, he was participating in an extracurricular activity, which was a privilege. And not only did Michael Smith, so he agreed to the testing through the contract and by not objecting to the testing. So
is there any limit to the number of adults or teachers who can be present for one of these drug tests?
No, Your Honor, there's no explicit limit.
So it would have been fine to invite the whole faculty in to make sure that, I mean, you could have 40 teachers there.
No, Your Honor, that probably would not be reasonable to have 40 people in the bathroom with Michael Smith while he...
Well, why do you need more than one person, which is what I think we've upheld in the past in Pottawatomie County versus Earls or Acton?
Well, Your Honor, in Pottawatomie County versus Earls, the court didn't state that it could only be one person and that there wouldn't be any situation in which there wouldn't be more.
Well, what is reasonable? Because we have to decide this. You tell us what's reasonable.
Well, petitioner...
Why did they need to have so many people in the room?
The petitioner is not seeking a bright-line rule about how many people is reasonable, but because reasonableness, when reasonable suspicion, has to depend entirely on circumstance, because it depends on the context within a search takes place, as well as balancing the need to search against the invasion which the search entails. And in this case, the facts are unclear on exactly how the procedure was carried out with the three monitors in the bathroom, but Michael Smith, as I've stated, accepted the method of testing by signing this contract. And primarily, one of the reasons there were monitors was because it was a precaution against making sure that there was no illegitimate tainting of the drug sample, the urine sample, in any way. Also, the principal asked the police officer to stand guard to ensure that Michael Smith could not I see that my time is up. May I briefly conclude?
Yes.
Michael Smith had reasonable suspicion. Principal Foyle had reasonable suspicion to drug test Michael Smith in this case. And for all these foregoing reasons, the petitioner respectfully requests that this court reverses the ruling of the Court of Appeals and finds that Calvert City School District did not violate the Fourth Amendment rights of Michael Smith. Thank you.
Your Honors, Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the Court. My name is Joanna Davis, and I stand on behalf of the respondent, Michael Smith. The issue in this case is whether or not the Fourth Amendment rights of my client, Michael Smith, were violated by school principal, Mr. Phillips, when he based and administered a drug test based off the unreliable testimony of Michael Smith's ex-girlfriend, Veronica Jones, and when he administered the test in an unreasonable manner that violated Michael Smith's Fourth Amendment rights. We respectfully request that this court affirm the lower court's judgment and hold that Michael Smith's Fourth Amendment rights were violated for the following reasons. First, the proper standard of probable cause was not met but was needed in order to conduct the search. Secondly, in the alternative, if probable cause was not needed, the standard of reasonable suspicion was not met either. Also, the test was given in an unreasonable way that violated Michael Smith's Fourth Amendment rights. First, there was no probable cause. Since the police officer was present, it raises a higher level of cause being probable cause because the police officer has the authority to arrest. In the Illinois Supreme Court, People v. Dilworth, a police officer arrested a student on reasonable suspicion that he had drugs in his possession. The court held that the police officer could operate under reasonable suspicion since he was a liaison officer and worked for the school. The police officer in this case, however, did not work for the school full-time nor part-time. He was there merely to do a drug sweep earlier that morning to see what kids had drugs in their possession.
So this would seem to be a very compelling argument if you were here on an appeal from a criminal conviction, but this isn't a criminal conviction, it's just disciplinary action within the school. And so why should we jack up the standard to probable cause when all we're talking about is a suspension at this point?
Your Honor, because the police officer was present. If the police officer wasn't present, reasonable suspicion would apply because it would have been school officials doing the search. However, since there was a police officer present, that raises the standard to probable cause. Also, in the alternative, if probable cause is not the proper standard, reasonable suspicion was not met. In a preceding case, T.L. Lowe, it stated that reasonable suspicion was suspicion that a crime has been or will be committed. Michael Smith successfully passed the canine units that morning, and police officers standing at random locations throughout the school did not find him in any violation of school rules that would make him seem suspicious of drug possession or drug use for that matter. All the principal had to go base reasonable suspicion off of was the unreliable testimony of Veronica Jones.
How is the testimony unreliable if he failed the drug test?
Your Honor, at the time the information was presented, nobody knew if Michael Smith would fail the drug test. So we cannot base our judgment off of what eventually happened. We have to justify the judgment off of...
What was unreliable about her testimony?
Veronica Jones is biased for three reasons. First, she has secondhand information. Veronica Jones never witnessed Michael Smith smoking any marijuana.
How do we know that?
In her statement, she states that Michael Smith had told her that he smoked marijuana before basketball games. And this could be true or not true because of peer pressure in the schools these days. So it's a 50-50 possibility, and you cannot base a suspicion off a 50-50 possibility because it's no longer a suspicion, it is a guess.
What should the principal have done?
The principal should have looked at the totality of the circumstances. Michael Smith had passed the drug dogs. Michael Smith was not investigated by police officers for being in violation or suspicious of anything. And all of a sudden, Veronica Jones comes up with this information. He should have investigated further in order to base his suspicion to search, to give Michael Smith a drug test.
Could the principal have said, based on the finding of possession of marijuana on the four team members that morning, I want to search the entire team and drug test the entire team, and I'm going to start with Michael Smith, he's the captain?
Your Honor, he could have done that because the whole team is being searched. and Michael Smith is no longer pointed out. Michael Smith could go first as long as the whole team is subject to undergo a drug test. Veronica Jones is also biased because she came to Principal Phillips with a stale statement. The 2 months in between the time Veronica Jones broke up, or Michael Smith broke up with Veronica Jones, made her statement stale because if there's a possibility, it was not true.
But counsel, if we're concerned about letting the school administrators do their job and conducive learning environments, where should we, what's the implications of putting the burden on the principal to do all this investigation?
Your Honor, we're not here to see what the burden should be. However, the school principal does have the responsibility of balancing the school safety, but he also has the obligation to balance and honor constitutional rights of the students, which the constitutional rights of Michael Smith were violated when he had to undergo this test. Also, Your Honor, TLO...
Let me just ask you, is your position that had she not had a personal relationship with him, but was just a classmate whom he had told this information to, that that would be acceptable, then that she would be a reliable witness and this would be a reasonable search?
Your Honor, looking at the totality of the circumstances, it would not have been reasonable to search Michael Smith. TLO stated that a search was constitutional if it was justified at its inception and if it was reasonably related in scope to the original objective. The original objective of the search that the police officers conducted that morning was to see what students had drugs in their possession. To go from a search to see who had drugs in their possession to searching a student to see if he had drugs in his system, it makes the scope wide and doesn't put it into perspective with the original goals of the search.
That's true of the original suspicionless dog sniff search, but he was the subject of an individualized drug test search based on information that he had used drugs in the past, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
So, I mean, would you have us adopt a categorical rule that the tip testimony of one student should never be enough to justify a reasonable suspicion drug test search?
I'm not saying that, Your Honor, but further investigations need to be made to see and look at the circumstances around which the suspicion lies. In this case, the suspicion is unreasonable because Michael Smith was not in any violation. Drugs did not show through in his performance. He had passed the canine unit. Nobody found him in any violation of any rules. And then Veronica Jones, an ex-girlfriend who may have had a grudge against him and who had stale information, came forward and gave her testimony. I believe in this situation a deeper investigation was needed before giving Michael Smith a drug test.
But the school would respond, this was their deeper investigation. That is, rather than just punishing him at that point, they decided to go forward and to conduct the drug test to give him a fair shot.
Yes, Your Honor, but the drug test was given in an unreasonable manner, which violated his constitutional rights.
Tell us about that.
In Vernonia, preceding case Vernonia, the court held that a search was constitutional if it decreased the student's privacy rights. In this case, Michael Smith's privacy rights were eliminated, because three people stood and watched as Michael Smith urinated into a cup in a private bathroom. This is unreasonable, Your Honor. In Vernonia, the court held that it is reasonable to have one monitor standing 12 to 15 feet behind the student and listening for normal urination sounds, and once the result was collected to check it for temperature. The court held that this was a less intrusive test, but also barely effective. Still equally effective. However, in this case, they eliminated his privacy by having three people stand in a private bathroom with him watching him urinate. Also, the test results were made public. Instead of following the consent form that Michael Smith signed, saying that he would be suspended from the basketball team, they suspended him from school and decided to make a public example of him by telling students, if you are caught with drugs, you will get the same treatment as Michael Smith. This is unconstitutional because nowhere in the consent form that Michael Smith and his parents signed did he agree to be made a public mockery. He only agreed to have the results disclosed on a need-to-know basis. Also, Your Honor, there is no reasonable suspicion because Veronica Jones, as I stated, is the biased witness with stale information, and she also is his ex-girlfriend who may have a grudge against him.
But a biased witness is not per se an unreliable witness. Would you agree to that? Oftentimes biased witnesses are the best witnesses because they have a reason to tell the truth.
In this case, she also has a reason to tell a lie because he did break up with her because of she was mad because he broke up with her and he was unfaithful to her during the relationship.
If we hold, if we uphold the lower court's ruling, will we need to distinguish TLO, overturn TLO, or would such a holding be consistent with TLO?
Your Honor, your ruling would be consistent with TLO because TLO laid out the guidelines for reasonable suspicion, which this case did not uphold. So TLO would still be effective. Based on these arguments, we respectfully request that this court affirm the lower court's decision and hold that the Fourth Amendment rights of my client, Michael Smith, were violated by his school principal, Mr. Phillips. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
The respondent stated that probable cause and reasonable suspicion were not met in this case and that probable cause should have been the standard because of police involvement. And she also stated that the police officer came in this case just for the testing. However, the facts state that police officers have been placed on school campus previous to this incident at conspicuous locations and routinely search students for drug possession. This was not just, they did not bring in a police presence for this incident or for just...
But doesn't that support her point that we really should be using a higher standard, probable cause standard, because as you say, it's a routine part now of school enforcement to have police officers present? I mean, haven't you blurred the distinction between criminal law enforcement in the street and in the school?
Yeah, there's a very large distinction because in schools there needs to be a safe environment at all times, and the police officers can help to bring a safe environment by conducting tests such as searching for possession, but ultimately there needs to be reasonable suspicion because that helps to allow the administrators to have a swift and informal disciplinary procedures when they are going through with disciplinary action.
Counsel, was the punishment here excessive? Your opposing counsel is suggesting that the remedy, assuming that the search were lawful and appropriate, that the remedy should have been removal from the basketball team for some period, not something more than that.
No, Your Honor, the punishment presented here is not excessive. Michael Smith violated school rules and he violated the drug testing policy. He was not allowed to be on the basketball team with drug use. That's why he signed this contract, and he violated this contract, so he was kicked off the basketball team. And also it was against school rules for him to be using drugs, so he was suspended. He was not made an example of, and also the test results were not made public necessarily. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. All right, thank you all very much. I guess we're going to withdraw briefly and deliberate, and we'll be back to give you some comments and to announce the winners in a few minutes.
All right.
All right, well, let me start by saying we're going to give you some feedback and comments, but we all agreed that this was just totally remarkable, that you guys are fabulous. And Professor Raskin and I have been doing this for about 7 years, and Addie's been doing it for several years, and we think this is about the best we've ever seen, and just really phenomenal. So we were really totally impressed, and we thank you for the great effort and the great talent that you brought to this. We're going to give each of you a little bit of feedback, I guess going in order. Jamie, you want to start with Olivia?
Sure. Are we going
to start with Olivia?
Okay. Let me just say We've been doing this since 1999. I've never seen four stronger presentations than this. It was just smashing, sensational. And I hope if you decide to go to law school, you come to law school here. I will tell them we'll just waive the admissions process and we'll just get you guys right in. We can waive college for that matter. Let's see. So we're going to start with Olivia.
You said, yeah.
Olivia, let's see. But you're absolutely unflappable. You're a machine. Just nothing could throw you. But you had a very nice style, and you were, you were not, you weren't pushy, but you stuck to your guns, and it was very impressive. One phrase that I thought was a little bit off was, although he was not caught. I don't know if you remember saying that, but that insinuated some guilt in terms of possession when the dogs came in, and I thought that was overstepping a little bit, because after all, there was never any proof of possession. It was a use that he was. But anyway, I thought that you were spectacular and to be congratulated. I don't know.
I totally agree. I mean, everything that we evaluate people on in moot court competitions, eye contact, manner of speaking, confidence of answers, ability to respond to tough questions, there's sort of nothing that we weren't actually filling out a score sheet for this round, but if we'd had a score sheet, there was nothing I could find to criticize you on. I thought you really did a wonderful job. You had a great command of your case and of the seemed like you'd thought through all the issues that we could possibly ask you and had good answers for them. So congratulations.
Well, it's hard to go third because there's not very much to say anyway. Congratulations. I last year spent a year clerking in the U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia and watching professional attorneys who are making a living argue all kinds of cases. And you, all four of you, could have easily stood up against any of the attorneys I saw in court last year and held your own. And I mean that completely, honestly, and sincerely. So you should all be unbelievably proud of yourselves. And I hope you'll keep competing, because you're very good. Brittany, great job. Olivia, sorry. I was looking at my notes. Very poised. Very good responses. You kept to your argument very well. You knew exactly where you wanted to go. You knew the points that you wanted to make, and you weren't thrown. You got back to your argument each time, even after lots of different questions. So, good job. Should we start at this
first
end?
First, the order. You can start. You can do Brittany.
Brittany, again, very, very good job. You knew your arguments, you knew the points that you wanted to make, and you made them. I would say that there was one question that Professor Raskin asked you about the, and I think this was a difficult question, but he tested positive, so don't we have the case, isn't it a moot question at that point? And I think that the answer is no, with the Fourth Amendment. You're looking at what they knew beforehand, before the test, and if there was a Fourth Amendment violation, you don't get to the results of the test. But otherwise, just extremely strong. You looked very comfortable. Great job.
I agree. I thought you did a terrific job. Seemed very comfortable with the argument, really knew your stuff. There was one phrase I wasn't sure about. You referred twice to it as a totalitarian, and I wondered if you meant totality test rather than totalitarian test, but very small point. I thought you did a really fine job. You seemed very comfortable. You answered our questions really well and did a really fine job.
And you guys had a much tougher argument. I think this problem was written by some government prosecutor somewhere. It was very slanted in the pro-government direction. But I thought that you had a thoughtful and creative approach, you know, when the cards are kind of stacked against you in a case like this, you've got to find the areas of weakness in the government side and then pound on those, and I thought you did that very effectively. It's a superb job.
All right, on to Lucas.
Lucas, I thought you had a wonderful style, just the kind of style that most lawyers spend, you know, an entire career striving to create, of kind of being lucid and sharp, but very conversational and intimate with the bench, and that's an astounding skill to have at your age. And I thought that your command of the doctrine was very fine. So I thought it was a very, very powerful performance.
Yeah, I agree. I think judges who hear appellate arguments would tell you that what they're really looking for is someone that can comfortably have a conversation with them and answer their questions so that they can get valuable information. And I thought you were about as comfortable as one could possibly be. It's amazing to be that poised at this age, and I thought you did a wonderful job.
Unfortunately, I'm just going to be repetitive. I thought so too. I thought that you, I wasn't on edge at all while you were up there. I just felt like any question I asked you, I could ask it in a way you were going to know what I was talking about. It was very comfortable, which is incredible. Great job. I really liked the way you stated your issues in the beginning, the issues in the case, and I loved that you gave us the in the alternative. It was very clear that you were pushing for probable cause. If you couldn't get probable cause, there was no reasonable suspicion. I mean, it was a very good job outlining your argument right from the beginning. And you did have your side did have the harder argument, so I think that was particularly important to do that. And you did respond well when you said that, I think Professor Raskin asked you the same question, and you said that, you know, he failed the drug test, or the question about him failing the drug test, and you said, you know, that he shouldn't have been tested in the first place, go back, focus back on the earlier part of the argument. One argument is easy in 2020 hindsight, but one argument that I thought your side, both of you, could have used is, you know, they have the school has to administrate, you know, conducive learning environment and all that. But think about the chaos that would be created if the principal was drug testing every time a student came in and made a complaint, particularly about the captain of the basketball. You know, I mean, like, you could have somebody who wanted to be captain of the basketball team. You could have ex-girlfriends, ex-boyfriends, gang rivalries, whatever it is. It would be complete chaos for the principal.
Someone from the rival team.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Right, exactly. So I think that would have been a good counter-argument to the, point on their side about keeping the school safe. You also just had such a good command of your argument. You got right back to it every time. Good responses on the questions. You did a great job.
Yeah, I'll just echo that as well. I thought you did a wonderful job. Your answers to the questions were great. You had anticipated everything we asked, I think, and really knew your stuff extremely well, gave us what we wanted to hear in the way of good, helpful, solid information. So that was great.
I thought it was a brilliant performance. You did a magnificent job of navigating between the details and the facts of the case, which are messy and complicated, and then the doctrine, which you made very clean and coherent for us. And also, what I found admirable was that there was a lot of moral passion in your presentation. And so, especially if you're taking the civil liberties or civil rights side in a case like this, it's important to establish kind of the moral high ground against the violation of the Bill of Rights or civil liberties, and I thought that you embodied that spirit and captured it very nicely.
Well, it sounds like a cliche. When we get to the finals, we always see good competitors. You guys were all great. We quite sincerely and genuinely agreed among ourselves that we wish we didn't have to choose among the four of you, but the slave drivers back there that run this competition told us that we do have to make a choice. And so with congratulations to all four of you for a fabulous job, the winners are Olivia and Joanna.
And we'll write college recommendations for anybody who needs one.
Yeah, you really all were amazing.
Thank you.